This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. How are you doing, Rick? How's your week been?
It's been good. We're in our summer rain pattern, and it rains every night, and it makes it complicated for, we were talking about our dogs before, it makes it complicated to take our dog out at night for his evening walk, because it's been raining the last three or four nights, I think, and lightning, and, you know, we're kind of in that pattern.
Well, we, as one of our dogs has aged, we have done something that I don't know why we didn't train them to do when they were puppies. We have a big walk-in shower, and when she wakes up at 2 a.m., I have just trained her to go in the shower. Like, she'll wake me up because she can't get out of bed by herself. She's too little. But we put her in the shower, and she pees. We hose it down. And a year ago, I would have told you that was gross, but I got to tell you, when it's raining at 2 a.m., I can't be beat. So anyway, we have a guest again this week. This is Kim Michalek. Good morning, Kim Michalek. Excuse me. Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you all? Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we always like to talk to people who write about interesting things to do in Florida, and your new book definitely fits the bill. So it is the Things to Do Before You Die in Winter Park, which is a little sobering. Like, that puts a sense of urgency to it. Like, we have to do it right now. Tell us, you know, I've read the book, so has Rick, of course. Tell us a little bit about why Winter Park, why you wanted to write about Winter Park.
Sure. I was born in Winter Park. I went to Rollins College in Winter Park, and I have been here consistently for the last 12 years. For me, Winter Park is, no offense, so much more interesting than Orlando. Sort of our big sister that gets all the attention. In fact, she's had three versions of this 100 Things book already, and I figured it was time that Winter Park got our own. We have so much beautiful nature, such a rich history and arts and culture scene, aside from, you know, the fabulous shops and restaurants. But there's really so much that makes us special, and I wanted to share that. When you want something done, you've got to do it yourself, right?
Yes.
I feel offended as an Orlando resident.
Rick, you love Winter Park. In fact, aren't you on the board of one of the things that Kim writes about in her book?
Yeah, I am on. I am the vice president of the board of the Winter Park History Museum, and I will be there Saturday installing their new exhibit. So, which is about the arts in Winter Park, the cultural scene, which is a big part of your book.
Absolutely.
So I have to tell you, I lived in Winter Park in college. I lived right on Morse Boulevard. And I didn't go to Rollins. I went to UCF, but I lived on Winter Park for a time. And I was so happy. I opened the book, and the first thing that I saw was Barney's. And Barney's, I think, started in Winter Park. For those of you who haven't read the book or been to Winter Park, Barney's is this great little coffee shop. And it is, I had a canister for coffee for years from Barney's. So I was pleased to see you include that. How did you decide what to include and what not to include?
Oh, it was very challenging. Honestly, people tend to think that it would be difficult to come up with 100 things, but it was actually more difficult to pare it down to 100 things. I could have probably had at least 50 just food and drink alone. So I've lived here a long time. I've, you know, been friends and had family that lived here a long time, lots of opinions to gather from, did a lot of research online, but really you have to go and you have to check these places out. So I spent a lot of time last year visiting and revisiting places that I've been to before, or haven't been to yet. And really they just jumped out at me. I mean, things that are iconic Winter Park. It's about more than just having good food. You want the vibe to feel good. Do you want to feel welcomed? You want to have, you know, a little bit of everything. The book is divided into five categories. So that helps to kind of stabilize things in terms of not having food and drink overrunning the entire book. And so that really helps to keep things focused.
Do you think there's were you nervous about having some of the restaurants and eateries and bars and stuff that they would go out of business? Because like there are certain addresses on Park Avenue that it seems like they're constantly turned over. There's standards like Briar Patch is always there. Seems like it's always going to be there. But there's places like I was a big fan of the Langford. It's not there anymore. It seemed like it would be there forever. Harper's Tavern seemed like it would be there forever. But there's a lot of places that are constantly revolving doors. Did that make you nervous to include stuff like that?
Absolutely. And actually, one of the shops that I included originally was closed when we were going through editing. So there was a last minute sort of switch out. And since the book has come out, there's been two new restaurants that I maybe would have included had they been here last year. And then there's the fabulous Austin's Coffee that they've been rallying to save, seems like every year since 2020. And hopefully they don't go anywhere. They're in the book and I love them, but you just never know. And so it's a snapshot in time. And I guess that's why they do second and third versions.
Yeah, I keep hoping that someday they'll do a new edition of my book so I can make some corrections. Kathy's lucky though. How many printings have they done of your first book?
Backroads did two hardcover. And then they went to paperback earlier than anticipated because it had sold through both hardcovers and they had to decide, do we do another hardcover or do we go to paperback early? And then when it becomes paperback, I think it's something like, I'm not really clear on how it works. They hide all their secrets, behind the curtain, but I think it's almost like a print on demand thing. So I don't know how, if there's a way to know how many runs they did at that. So.
Did you get to correct things?
Not on those. Well, one of them, yes. I mean, I got to correct something in my bio that had changed. And now that we have the audiobook coming out next month, I emailed them and I said, hey, when I wrote this first book, I was operating under some colonial history that's wrong, that the Seminole tribe is new here. Is there any way we can fix that, please, in the audio version? And they said they would do their best. So
Oh, cool.
I don't know what that means.
So I'm curious, Kim, on the 100 Things to Do series, did you get to do an updated version if these fly off the shelf and you sell out, will they let you make updates? Because what's there's a new Imperial, right, in Winter Park, which is one of my favorite places, and it probably ch changed since you first came out, right?
That actually, I had some insider knowledge on that one. So I got the update before they opened.
Cool.
And so that is correct information for the Imperial and Park. I believe it's something like 2 years. If the book is doing okay after 2 years, they look at a second version and updating some of the entries as well as making corrections. I'll let you know. Hopefully we get there.
It's amazing because I hadn't even been to the new Imperial because it seemed like it just opened a couple of weeks ago. Is the other place the one that's like the Chapman and Chase kind of hoity-toity history themed place that's kind of close to Fairbanks? Is that in? It's just so I can't. It's hard for me to keep up with all the cool stuff in Winter Park,
I know what you're
honestly.
talking about. No, that one opened more recently than I was
Yeah, that's
able
what I thought. But
to.
there's so much good stuff in here that I never have done. Honestly, I would think I would have to move to Winter Park in order to get all these things done. There's a lot of places where when it's Christmas time and I do my Christmas shopping, there's a lot of places in here I go that are like my go-to places, like Kathmandu. And did you have 10,000 Villages in here?
I do. Yes, that's one of the ones that I sort of had to fight for. We Reedy Press and we try to keep things really local and independently owned. And 10,000 Villages is not that. But I really felt that it still encapsulated so much of Winter Park. And for me, it's one of those places that is the first place I look for when I'm buying gifts, right? Just so much of their value system that I believe in. So 10,000 Villages is one of the few that's not independently owned, but it's in the book, absolutely.
Very cool. So how did you I know you're a writer and a poet. How did you decide this is the way you wanted to go? Because if from poetry to this, which is very kind of concrete, literal project, is kind of a leap. How did you make that leap?
That's a good question. I've been doing some freelance editing and copywriting for the last few years, and so I've been sort of working on more of those nonfiction writing chops. I had an opportunity last year. I had my second child in April and had some time. Reached out to Reedy Press because I was familiar with the series and knew they didn't have anything in Winter Park. I was grateful that they jumped at the opportunity and sort of spent my summer and fall last year just diving in. I feel like when it's something that you know so much about and that you're passionate about, a lot of the writing skills translate. Writing a book was always a bucket list thing for me. And truthfully, there's not a huge market for poetry, right? So if I was going to publish in the next few years, for sure, this was a better way to go. And it really was. It's a passion project, so fun for me.
I used to date a poet. She actually lived here briefly in Orlando, and then she moved away. And I know what you mean. But I also think, don't give up on the poetry because I think it's important. And there are vehicles like Burrow Press. Are you familiar with Burrow Press?
I'm familiar with Burrow.
They do, sometimes they'll do anthologies and there'll be opportunity for poetry. I think poetry is really, really important. And especially poetry about Florida. Kathy, is there anything that the Florida Studies does with poetry? Do they still have a
No.
journal? No.
No. That journal was not out of where I went. It was not out of my master's program, the Florida Studies Journal. I don't know where that was out of. If it was, it was not around when I was there. No, the poetry is a passion project. I only know of maybe two people who have done really well with their Florida poetry. And I'm gonna have to Tyler Gillespie, I believe he wrote, I said that, and now I need to check and make sure that that is what he wrote because I previewed one of his books for the press. Yes, Florida Man, Poems Revisited, Tyler Gillespie, and then I'm gonna say Carson McCullough, and that's wrong, but he wrote this wonderful poem, and it's in an anthology, and the poem is called Because This Is Florida. And it is one of my favorite poems about Florida ever. Campbell McGrath, geez. I don't know where I got Carson McCullough. Sorry, Campbell McGrath. That was bad. Proving that we are just very much not being paid by big poetry to produce this episode. But yeah, those are the two poets that I know that have managed to publish and somehow break through the mainstream. Now, that said, Campbell McGrath is someone I read in grad school. And then Tyler Gillespie has broken through with some other books about Florida that are not poetry. So
Yeah, he's a
poetry's
really good guy
hard.
too.
Yeah. Oh, he's wonderful. I think he's great. He lives right by me and I never see him. We have all these wonderful people by us and I need to spend more time.
So going back to Winter Park,
Yeah,
isn't Willie
sorry.
Collins a resident of Winter Park, or the former poet laureate for the United States?
I'm not sure if he still is, but he definitely was at one time, and I know he was affiliated with Rollins for a while. I was actually able to work with him on one of their Winter with the Writers events. So, I mean, that's a whole other level, a whole other echelon of fame, right?
Yeah. My one Billy Collins story is at the Christmas party for the Winter Park History Museum. It was at the golf club, and I was pouring drinks, as you know, because I'm a board member, and they make us do stuff like that. And I poured him a glass of wine, and he said, "Keep going, keep going. That's not enough. Keep going," and maybe fill it all the way to the top of the glass. Anyways, that's my Billy Collins story.
So
Go ahead.
now I have a question not related to poetry or wine.
Okay.
And I don't know if you would know, because honestly, I don't remember if this made it in the book because 100 things are a lot to remember. But Umi, which is the Japanese restaurant right on Park Boulevard, do either of you know if that has changed names or hands in the past 30 years?
Yes. I want to say this is a somewhat relatively new restaurant.
Yeah,
That
it's
is
in the book.
the last
This is
10
the
years. Exact place that I tasted sushi for the first time and had, I don't remember what it was called in 1993, 94, but it was the exact same location. And when I look at it, it looks like almost exactly the same in size. I'm like, it's not possible that a sushi restaurant has endured that long, is it? But apparently...
you know, there are places in Winter Park that are just kind of institutions that last, you know, contrary to what I said about some places being revolving doors, there are places that are just always there, you know, the Park Plaza Hotel,
yes.
It's been there a gazillion years.
Well, it's one of the oldest hotels in Florida.
Is it?
It's, yeah, I mean, it's not the oldest, but it's definitely, it's not new. The Park Plaza, I find fascinating. I've wanted to stay there, and anytime I want to stay there, I can't get a room. Like when I came out and spoke at Casa Feliz a few years ago, I actually checked to see if it was possible, and no, they didn't have a room. So
yeah, I stayed there on my wedding night. It's a great place. It really
well,
is.
You really took Julie for a treat. You took her far.
No, we saved our honeymoon for later, a few months later, but it was fun actually. There was they do an annual event where they decorate a bunch of tables down on Park Avenue. You know what I'm talking about. I forgot.
Dinner
what
on the Avenue.
Dinner on the Avenue, and that was going on, so we walked around, saw a bunch of friends. It was actually really lovely and had wonderful dinner because we got married early in the day. You know, it's like all these places I have such strong memories with, all these places on Park Avenue, because you know that's when I moved here in the late 80s, it's one of the first places I kind of discovered, and you know have been going back to again and again and again, and so I'm very invested, and my wife's family is from Winter Park, and that's kind of one of the reasons I serve on the board. There's a place I've been dying to go to though that I talked to somebody about on Saturday, this Ancient Artifacts and Treasures. What is, tell me about that place, because
I love that store.
Really?
You kind of have to go in with no expectations because everything is crammed in there. They have it organized in an eclectic sort of way. Don't bring small children or large bags. You'll be breaking something that's thousands of dollars.
Okay.
They have everything. If you want arrowheads, if you want ancient fossils, it's the place that I buy my Father's Day gifts every year because my dad is into trilobites and amber with, you know, bugs inside and that are thousands upon thousands of years old. It's just very cool. They have more modern type jewelry and things too, but especially things rooted in Florida history. If you want a megalodon tooth, they'll hook you up. And they're just always really nice in there. They're very knowledgeable and happy to talk to you. It's a very, very small shop. You'll blink if you miss it, but obviously I included it because I felt that everyone should know.
So did you expand the borders of Winter Park a little bit just to include certain things?
Yes, a little bit. I call it Winter Park and the Winter Park community, right?
So
there's
okay.
A couple of things that are outside the traditional city of Winter Park, and there are a couple of things that are even outside the unincorporated area of Winter Park. I had to include the Enzian, and I had to include the Zora Neale Hurston Museum over in Eatonville within a couple of miles, and there's only a handful of things that aren't.
Yeah, and those are close enough. I think you can get away with it. That's very fun. And I think those are both important places. One, from a historical perspective, I think Eatonville is critically important. And you know, Rollins actually produced one of Zora's, they did a performance of one of Zora's plays on campus while she was alive, which is a super cool historical tidbit. So there's a connection between Winter Park and Zora. And the Enzian is one of those places, you know, that I think is part of the cultural fabric of Central Florida. So I think those are good inclusions. And there's also a lot of Winter Park that's unincorporated. My mother-in-law used to live in Winter Park Pines, which is actually in the county, but not in the city limits. And so there's all that stuff kind of to the east of the city limits that's really kind of Winter Park, but not officially Winter Park.
A similar sort of shop to the Ancient Artifacts store is the Prometheus Esoterica, which is kind of on the other side, crossed over 436.
Oh.
And they've got all sorts of really cool things too. They're a newer store, but if you want a skull of any animal, if you want wet specimens, if you want a taxidermied version of anything, I think they even do like custom requests.
Now, what's
are you hearing this, Kathy? Are you hearing this?
So yes, and what I find fascinating about this is that I am doing, as we do the show and we're talking, I try and find the websites to do show notes later so we can offer the links. I started to type in Prometheus Esoterica and it popped right up because I have been to this website, which comes as a shock to absolutely no one. Yes. Go to the website, go to our show notes, go to the Prometheus Esoterica website, and then just take a look at some of their services, because it really is, you know, what is a small wet specimen? Let's just leave it at that.
You know, this is right up my alley, of course. Oh, I'm looking at their website. That's
okay,
so
let's come
cool.
back to the podcast. Let's
Okay. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Unfortunately, they don't have a lot of inventory on their website, and so I won't have to buy it. You know, so I have behind me.
Instagram has more.
I have two pieces of taxidermy behind me, and so.
And one wife.
Kind of a weirdo. And yes, fortunately. And guess what I did this morning?
Did you buy another
one? I'm making a Fiji mermaid.
Awesome.
Making a ceramic one because I'm going to be in another show in the fall. And the theme is circus. So I'm doing like the sideshow aspect of the circus. Mm-hmm. So there will be a small Fiji mermaid. So this place probably has a Fiji. This Prometheus Esoterica probably has a Fiji mermaid. So I'm excited.
Maybe they'll carry yours. Maybe you can send.
I could see doing like hitting all these, some of these weird chops. Like, you know, my go-to place is Orange Tree. I love Orange Tree Antiques because I always find a lot of weird things I can incorporate into my ceramics. So I could hit the place on Fairbanks, Orange Tree, and then this other place near 436 all in one crazy weird shopping trip. So your book has already proved to be useful for me.
There you go. I'm glad to hear it.
as it will be for so many people. thank you for coming on the show and talking about some of this stuff and giving Rick a new place to go find something taxidermied, because we know that's super important to him. But it's really been great. Are you working on another similar book?
You know, you piqued my interest here. There's a kind of a weird and wonderful series. I think that's the exact title that Reedy does as well. And maybe Winter Park needs a version of that. or maybe I'll be working more on my Florida poetry. We'll see. Got to have something in the works.
Do you ever do readings, poetry readings?
Not in a while.
Well, I think don't give up on the poetry, because I think it's important. Especially Florida-inspired poetry, because, you know, Kathy and I put our heads together. We came up with three Florida poets. There's got to be more, and we need to do better. There's a million authors out there, but there's not enough poets.
Well, there's not enough good poets. Let's be very clear on this, okay?
Kim has an advanced degree from UCF, and I'm sure that means she did you study poetry, or did you study writing?
So I studied English literature at Rollins, and then at Chatham University I studied poetry.
Okay. See, she got to be good. She got to have some game, I think.
I'm not against it. I'm not saying she shouldn't do poetry. I'm just saying all poems and poets are not created equal. So there are plenty of poets out there. But someone who's actually gone to school and trained and practiced their craft, that's sometimes a little more rare. But anyway, Kim, thank you for coming on the show. We will definitely, the show notes have a link to your book and all the places that we included here today, including where you can go to get something taxidermied. So that's super exciting. Just in case you need to know, folks, we've got your back. So stop by Winter Park, have some sushi, pick up something taxidermied, stop by, get some coffee, see Rick at the History Museum if he happens to be there, and definitely a book worth picking up if you are interested in spending some more time in Winter Park. So thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Rick. It's been fun.
Before we thank our listeners, Rick, I definitely want to share something with you and our listeners. Do you watch the show Poker Face?
No, I do
okay.
not.
So it's on Peacock. It is Natasha Lyonne, and it's very much done in the style of Columbo. And each episode is kind of, there's a through line, but each episode is kind of self-contained where she's helping to find a murderer. And I'm behind. There's only two seasons so far, but I'm a little behind. So I'm catching up on season two. And season two has brought her to Florida. And last night, there was an episode we watched in Florida, and in the middle of there being a shootout with a mob informant at a small airport in the panhandle, I believe, of Florida. I'm not even sure where. Actually, it might not have been the panhandle. It doesn't matter. There was a guy, one of the cops was kind of a buffoon, and instead of trying to do his job, this FBI agent was using his iNaturalist app. And out of the blue, he goes, "I think I saw a Toria tree." And I lost my mind. Like, I have been waiting to get to the podcast to tell you somebody mentioned the Toria tree. And now that I think about it, it was the episode, I think, either immediately before or after it, because I was binging, that was in the panhandle. So it wasn't even that. It was somewhere else. And I just shout out for the Toria tree, and they said it right. It was great. So if nothing else, if you are as much of a freak for trees as I am, please go watch Poker Face. Find the episode with Rhea Perlman and a bunch of other people. John Mulvaney, I think, is in it. And you, just a wonderful shout out to a beautiful little tree that I have this really unhealthy relationship. Okay. If it was a Facebook status, it would just be, it's complicated. How about that?
So I have a moment yesterday from television that I got excited about. So this was the final Jeopardy question. The category was U.S. cities. And the clue was a character in As You Like It and a soldier in the Seminole Wars are cited as possible origins for the name of this city. And I was so pleased that two out of the three final Jeopardy contestants got it right.
Did you get it right?
Yeah. Of course, the reality is Orlando Reeves did not exist.
Right.
And I always go with the Shakespeare reference because Judge Spear, who was influential in getting the county seat, moved to Orlando for Orange County, was a big Shakespeare nut. So the answer, of course, is Orlando. What is Orlando?
Where is Orlando? I am a little surprised that they got that. I mean,
I know
everybody. I always tell people Florida's or Orlando's name origin story is always hotly contested because everybody has a theory, right? Everybody knows exactly how Orlando got its name and nobody agrees. So, but I'm impressed that you watch Jeopardy.
It's a nightly ritual.
And are you usually this good or is it only with Florida things?
It depends on how tired I am and if I've had a glass of wine.
Fair enough. That's fair. All right. Well, I think that about does it, except, of course, we want to thank our loyal and faithful subscribers who send us money every month. Not a lot of money. You can subscribe for as little as $3, as much as $10. Of course, you can always give us more, but we always do thank all our subscribers at the end of every episode. All right, so thank you so much to Michael Gargalak, Ryan Worthington, John Baum, Angela Connolly, Natalie Zachrick, Davida Breyer, Leslie Hallweg, Carol Miller, Elise Smith, The Betts Boys Adventure, Brian Woodall, Brad Sager, and Stephanie Hewley. Please, please, please head on over to floridaspectacular.buzzsprout.com and go ahead and click that you want to support us. And we will see you all next time on the Florida Spectacular. Thank you.
Ciao.